Welcome to Let's Get Our Ship Together, a queer women of color debrief on the latest in queer lady and POC representation in television and film. I'm Amira.
And I'm Aphrodite.
In this episode, we will be talking about...
Exercise your demons.
Yes. But before we get into Charmed, Aphrodite, did you vote?
Yes. Yes, I... Of course I voted. Oh my God.
Yeah, of course. We both voted. I voted absentee in Michigan because I'm not yet registered in California, but that's going to change.
You're doing your duty. Vote where your vote counts.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to do it for as long as possible, but now I have to get a California driver's license because apparently, according to state law, you have to get it within 10 days of moving, and no one told me that. So.
Oh, crap. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, so the election didn't go... you know, favorably for everybody, but I like to focus on the positives, and there were a lot of really inspiring firsts in the election results. So I want to briefly read off a list of inspiring queer folks and or women.
Do it. Yes.
So, of course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, as if it wasn't already inspiring enough that she won her election, she is actually the youngest congresswoman to be elected at the tender age of 29.
God, that's hot.
Can you believe? And she just turned 29. This whole time she's been running. When she won the primary, she was 28.
No!
I know. Wow. I know. She's amazing. Ayanna Pressley is the first Black House member from Massachusetts. We have Rashida Tlaib. She's Palestinian American. And Ilhan Omar, who's Somali American and a former refugee. Both became the first Muslim congresswomen.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've got chills right now.
I know. Jared Polis, a white man, but first openly gay man elected governor. And note that he is not the first openly LGBT person because that honor went to Kate Brown, who is bisexual and was elected governor in Oregon in 2016.
Yeah.
Charisse Davids, a former MMA fighter and an open lesbian. Became congresswoman in Kansas. Her and Deb Haaland, who became congresswoman in New Mexico, are both the first Native American congresswomen. So
and
lots
Charisse
of
is gay. She's gay,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, openly lesbian, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I should have heard way more about her because she's also hot.
I know. Have you seen that picture of her flexing? Oh, my God.
I know. All these, like, hot queer women politicians. I'm into it.
Yeah. There's a couple more. So Jahana Hayes is the first Black congresswoman from Connecticut. And Veronica Escobar and Sylvia Garcia are the first Latina congresswomen from Texas, which is shocking because more than a third of the population of Texas is Latinx. So inspiring stuff. I'm happy. I mean, there were a few things, of course, that I was not happy about, but still.
We need icons. We need to see ourselves represented, not just on the screen, but in like real world.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Are you a lesbian Native American woman? Because you could run for Congress.
Yes.
Like any of the groups, any of the people I just mentioned, I mean, it could be you. It could happen to you. This is for everybody. So I feel like it's really inspiring, and I really applaud all of these people for running in the first place.
I mean, considering that the last election night that we experienced was traumatizing, and it ended with me and my friends sobbing, and like,
lots
you know,
of,
weeks and weeks and weeks of prolonged despair, this is a great, you know, step up.
Exactly. Yeah. One. I'm feeling like shreds of hope for the first time in 2 years. So I think that's a good thing.
I'm still bummed that Stacey Abrams didn't win. Like, Oprah was on her side.
I know. Oprah, Obama.
Oprah doesn't lose. It just doesn't happen.
I know.
I'm like, I'm sad about that.
I know. I know. Yeah. And a couple of other losses in Florida that I was really bummed out about. And then, of course, Beto O'Rourke in Texas, I was disappointed to see and surprised, frankly. But when you look at the demographic vote, it looks like white women screwed us up over again. So
as usual,
no surprises
there. Don't count on
them.
Yeah. Don't count on them. Just like in this episode of Charmed, actually. Don't count on white women.
Ooh, good segue. Yes. We are introduced to Elder Charity in this episode.
Yeah, spoilers galore, but also this was a good episode. I think what it did was introduce us to the larger context, like the elders, you know, we want to know more. And it's not just that you three are the only three witches, it's that there's an entire society of witches.
Yeah.
And witches in positions of power who are making decisions. It was actually a great way to introduce Charity, having her sort of play the role of this elder who also knew their mother and could lend a little bit of insight into how the elders worked. And, you know, I'm starting to believe that this show is actually about Mel.
Yeah, she seems very central, especially, you know, that scene at the end when they were sitting at the table and Macy and Maggie were, like, you know, at her sides.
Well, the reason why I think starting to believe that this might actually be Mel's show is because the way that Charity is introduced, she is introduced as, quote unquote, the establishment, right? The establishment TM among witches. I mean, I don't want to jump too far ahead towards the end of the episode, but the way in which the episode reaches its resolution turns on Mel's pushback against that establishment and how she ends up being successful when she resists the status quo. And so that kind of makes me feel like, is Mel the leader here? Like, of the three?
I was getting those same vibes, and I'm still waiting to see if maybe this was just a more Mel-centric episode, because it began with a prologue, which was, you know, a scene of her and her mother talking to Angela, telling her how they felt about her coming forward about what was the professor's name. Yeah. So before she went into a coma. And so basically it was establishing that she's the one with the connection to her, and that's why she was so invested in finding out, wait, is Angela still in there? We can't just kill her, et cetera, et cetera. The other episodes, if anything, were just, you know, equal among the three. It didn't seem like any of them were Macy-centric or Maggie-centric. Mm. If there was a face to the show, it would be Mel's so far from what I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, she was so central in this episode, not just because of her relationship with Angela, but also because of her relationship with Nico. I think they positioned Mel really well to sort of deal with the episode of the week and also move the season forward. She was the first to sort of rebel against the elder, Charity. She vocalized her dissent, and then Charity, if you notice, just like muted her, like a white woman silencing you.
Yeah, I really felt like the elder Charity represented white feminism, you know, like she wants to do things that help for the greater good. She shuts down those around her. She knows best, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Mel easily whips out a spell that can show whether or not Angela is still in that body. And so I'm like, did Charity just not try? Was she not powerful enough? I don't really, you know, because I know the charmed ones have like some special powers. So it's possible she just legit didn't know how to do that. But you know, I kind of doubt it since she's supposed to be super old and wise.
Honestly, just don't trust someone who thinks they can solve poverty with capitalism. Mm. Like, that is when she said, oh, no. I'm like, I do all this other work to like help address poverty and inequality with female focused capitalism. I'm like, right. Girl, what are you talking about?
The writers actually intended for her to be a direct stand in for symbolizing white feminism.
She is like white feminism TM, white savior complex TM. You know, like it was all of those things. And it was when she muted Mel and to keep her from disobeying her orders and said, you need a voice to cast the spell, you know, acknowledging that she just stole this girl's voice.
Yeah,
you think that the ends justifies the means, that it does, like the process doesn't even matter. What matters is the outcome. And the way that she goes about doing things is so unjust and dangerous. And so I'm like, don't trust this bitch. You know, she's committed all sorts of atrocities, like in the name of the quote unquote greater good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really would have wanted to see how well she and the girl's mom would have gotten along.
Did they get along though?
Well, because she says she knows her and she like had been her friend for a long time or whatever. And I feel like they probably had a good, you know, sort of like working relationship, you would say. But I think that they probably butted heads a lot.
Introducing Charity as a character also gave us some information for Macy, because Macy has that scene with Charity. Oh, yeah. And I was so moved by that. Like Macy finally learning something about her mother and that her mother was hurting after letting her go.
Yeah. As Kristen noted while we were watching, because the mother's power was prophecy. So that's how she knew that she would have to give up her daughter, because she foresaw that she would have the charmed ones and that they would have to be split up for their protection.
Is that the reason why? Or is that in the original series?
I mean, this is like our strong theory. that that's what it, because Harry also brings up, like, you know, that was her power, it was prophecy, which is interesting because that's the same power as the youngest sister in the original series. But
oh, really?
That's my guess, is that's why she had to give Macy away. A couple of things at the beginning of the episode that I loved, which was, like, you know, typical witty banter of these girls. Maggie has nicknamed the Harbinger
Harvey. Harvey?
I felt like it was very in character for her.
That was cute.
I loved it. And then also Mel's line, "Do not reveal your monarchy side to me, Harry. I was just starting to like you."
Yes. Yes.
I, like, immediately whipped out my phone and was, like, typing furiously right after she said,
"Oh my god." Stamesies.
Oh, that was so good. And that was in context after Harry said, "Think of her as royalty," regarding charity. So we talked about this a little bit last week. Remember when you said, you know, why is Mel dating a cop? Remember when Nico mentioned to her partner Trip that she was like, maybe she's just nervous around cops, as many people of color are. And said that Mel doesn't like guns and apparently doesn't let Nico even bring her sidearm into the house.
Yes. Yes. So this was when we're finally acknowledging that Mel is dating a cop. And the show was sort of acknowledging that tension right there, that Mel probably disagrees with a lot of the things that Nico does as a police officer. And they probably have had to work that out before their first breakup. They've come up with a set of rules where they're both sort of compromising. The show and the writers making that acknowledgement is kind of subtle. It's not giving us the full story exactly, but it is sort of a hint of, you know, that the fact that they don't necessarily agree on all things. And I really like that Nico mentioned that. P.S. Nico, when she was, like, in the living room and, like, interviewing them, and she was wearing that red top with the wide leg denim pants.
Yeah.
That was hot. Have you noticed
Nico was
her
just
hair
always hot. I just have to say, like, Nico is one of those people, every time she's on the screen, I'm like, oh my god, she is so, like, purely attractive.
Yes.
Like, she's just
and her
gorgeous.
Hair gets her hair is perfect.
Yeah, I
her
know.
Hair gets better each episode. I think what they realized is, like, the pilot episode, they were like, why are we detracting from your beauty? We need to, like, get rid of the glasses, get rid of the ponytail, and that's why they made her drink that truth serum. So she's like, why do I wear glasses? I'm hot. We know. We know. So I love seeing her in these outfits, and I also love that we got to see more of her independent of Mel.
Yeah.
Like, we get to see a little bit of her professional life, and she's, like, leaning up against the car. Her partner is hugely suspicious of Mel because Mel, like, can't lie to Nico. She just doesn't know how.
Yeah.
And this is going to continue to be a problem. Mel is the worst.
I know. Oh, at lying. God. And she has to, like, freeze it in the middle of the interview. I was like,
I know.
Really suspicious, Mel.
I know. She makes it look even more suspicious.
It's almost like they heard you. I mean, obviously, this episode was already filmed and set to air when we recorded our last podcast, but it's like they heard your complaints or requests, rather, that, you know, we get acknowledgement of the fact that Mel is dating a cop and that doesn't totally align with the rest of what we've seen of her character, and that you wanted to see more of Nico being independent of Mel at her job. And we got both of those things in this episode, you know, and it's only episode 4.
I know, it's only episode 4. I'm hoping that we get a little more meet there. So I did mention in our last podcast episode that even though I feel uncomfortable with so many characters who are cops on TV, when it comes to, like, supernatural shit, it kind of makes sense to have someone in law enforcement be, like, investigating all this weird shit that happens. And that's kind of where Nico can be integrated into the main story arc of each episode, whereas the love interests of Macy and Maggie can't.
Right.
Because their roles aren't directly advancing the plot.
The side of Nico that we saw in this episode reminds me of the cops of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where it's sort of like, you know, they acknowledge the problems. I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping we see a little bit more of that from Nico, but just the fact that, I mean, of course, she is a woman of color, so it makes sense that she's like, yeah, people of color get nervous around police. It was such, like, a quick response for her. Like, she didn't even have to think about it. Like, talking to her white male partner, like,
yeah,
well, duh, Trip. Like, obviously. Yeah, we're talking to, like, three brown women. Like, what did you think was going to happen?
But, like, she probably is like, this is super suspicious that the three sisters invited this white lady to redecorate the attic.
Yeah, like, I know.
You're redecorating the attic, Mel?
Yeah.
And then she's, like, trying to smile through it. I mean, I actually really enjoyed that scene. It was just funny.
It was.
It was funny.
Yeah, it was a great introduction. I know we've talked before about emotional labor in relationships and how it's usually women or femmes who provide it. And we saw in this episode after Trip died and Nico, you know, apparently Charity had staged it so that it looked like he hung himself and she framed him for killing the people on Halloween, which is, I think, unnecessarily cruel. But in any case, Nico is devastated and sobbing, and Mel is providing the emotional support to Nico. So I was really happy to see that scene. So it looks like it's a reciprocal relationship, you know?
No. That's okay. Good point. I'm glad you raised it because, you know, we come up with theories about these characters based on two episodes worth of information. So we're really sort of building our understanding of the characters as we go on. And we still only have four episodes to go off of.
Unfortunately, I'm still unhappy with Maggie's love story. The music in that scene when they kiss.
I was just going to talk about that music.
I'm like, so we want them to get together? Because I sure as fuck don't.
No. It makes me so mad when the creators score music to couples as if we're supposed to ship them. And I'm just like rolling my eyes to the back of my skull. Like, no, I am not shipping nothing. Do not play this music. You will not fool me. I am not fooled by this.
Yeah.
And you know that there are people who are like shipping that. And I'm like, oh, this is so stupid. It's so stupid. He's feeding her a line. This is a line. He tells her that he's sure that she's smart. I'm like, but how do you know? You've only run into each other twice and like had barely a conversation with each other.
Yeah.
Like,
okay. So I thought it was like, oh, he's just serving a purpose as like whatever supposedly attractive boy that she's going to fall in love with. But then he tells her this, first of all, stupid ass story about how he always thought that he was not good at the guitar because his brother was better at it and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, hashtag white boy problem. Seriously? Like, this is the,
oh my God,
this is the struggle of your life that you can think to tell her about. Like, how much more powerful would that scene have been if it had been, you know, a person of color telling her like, oh, all my life I believed that I was like not good at math because that's what like was thought of, you know, that's like a stereotype of like my race or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, and then because it bothered me, not just because the story was stupid, but because that's what she used later on when communicating with Angela and inspiring her to come out and like fight off the demon. I was really upset by that because it was such a beautiful moment. They were using their mom's spell written in Spanish and influenced by Santeria magic. And so I was like, yes, like POC, this is gonna be a woman WOC power. We're going. And then, oh, that thing that bland white boy just told me, let me bring that up right now. Come on. That was like, oh, I didn't like that at all. That was like a huge fumble on the part, on the writer's part. So
Charity is a caricature and they want us to know that she is. But with this kid, I'm like, you're not painting him out to be a caricature, even though he is one. He's like playing this sort of tortured soul. Oh yeah. I wish I'd been like more like my brother, blah, 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 blah. I promise I'm a really good tutor. I can teach you things. That's stupid. Like, we don't need more white boys teaching women things.
Exactly. I mean, I feel like the writers, obviously, you know, they're going to have some white people in there. I'm guessing they're the ones that wrote this storyline. But I'm like, they have to know who their demographic is, okay? You're putting, like, a QWOC heavy show on the air and, like, incorporating all of these, like, cultural influences in the story that was once such a white story. I have to say I'm like struggling to watch the original series. I'm like struggling to make my way through it because it's just like white person, another white person, another white person. And so I feel like the writers of the reboot should recognize that their demographic is entirely like is going to be really, really different now. If you're going to bring a white person onto the screen, they need to like bring it. You know what I mean? Like no more average looking white boys with bad haircuts who are like horrific tropes that we've already seen before.
I mean, I even got a little bit worried when they tried to play up some kind of dynamic between Charity and White Lighter. I'm like, no, don't care.
I know. Kristen was like, I was sure that Harry was gay.
I'm down with that.
Yeah.
Make him bi.
Yeah, or even like asexual. Like he doesn't need a love interest.
No, he doesn't need a love interest. I just feel like in a show that is centering women of color to give like white people even more unnecessary screen time. Mm-hmm. It just, yeah, it rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah.
But I feel like Maggie this season is definitely going to be our Sutton. Like, the storyline that is just, like, the weakest, yeah, that we cannot stand. And it's, like, it's the weak part of the show.
Well, I don't know if she's a Sutton or a Jane more, actually. I feel like,
you know. Sutton and Jane, honestly. Both of them.
It's just, like, straight girl storylines get so bad sometimes. But
I'm, like, I'm still keeping my fingers crossed that, like, Maggie proves us wrong. Like, maybe something will change. I don't know. Maybe she'll reject the guy. Maybe he'll, like, get killed off. You know, I don't know.
Macy is still good. I'm still happy with Macy's storyline so far. Yeah. There hasn't been a lot of development in it, which is probably why I like it.
Well, Macy is just a total nerd. Like, she yelps when she's looking under the microscope.
I know.
At the Harbinger cells being all disease-like.
Yeah.
And then Marcus, that's his name, right?
No, Marcus, Galvin.
Sorry, why did I think his name was Marcus?
I'm not sure.
Galvin is like, I actually have Marcus written in my notes here. I'm like, what the hell, Jamie?
That's so funny.
So Galvin is like, what are you thinking about? And then she says, utilitarianism. I like to play trivia with my sisters. You are such a nerd.
I know.
With Macy's character, she's sort of easing into her interaction with this guy. But, like, more importantly, what I like about this episode is that it set her up to potentially be the outsider again in the trio.
Yeah.
And it set her up to be the quote-unquote rational scientist. So this is an instance where her conversation with her male love interest was, like, actually great, because Galvin was
I was mistaken earlier. It's Gavin, not Galvin. I don't know where I got we're both wrong.
Okay, sorry.
We obviously just do not pay attention to the male characters.
No, we really don't. I don't even know what the other guy's name is.
The white guy? So, I have no idea. Yeah.
We don't know. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. So poor Gavin.
Yeah.
What I liked about his contribution there is that he tells Macy that it's okay to listen to your emotions. Mm-hmm. So another instance where, like, the masculine or whatever male, quote unquote, supposed character subverts our expectations.
Yeah.
And is that he's actually saying, like, there's actually nothing wrong with, like, valuing emotions and letting that weigh into your decision making rather than just relying strictly on logic and rational thinking. And I like that, because usually gender wise, it's the other way around, right?
Right.
It's like the male character or the masculine character that says, be logical, be rational. And the female character that is, like, drawing from her emotions to make decisions. In this case, Macy is the one who is subtly challenged by Gavin to start listening to her feelings. And when Charity tells her that story about her mother, and how, by the way, that scene was so powerful.
Oh,
and
I know.
Finding out that her mother asked a friend to cast a spell to take away her anguish. Mm-hmm. That was beautiful. That was such a beautiful scene. But it also allowed Macy to sort of say, wait a second, I'm going to let my emotions help me make the decision to be united with my sisters on this issue.
Yeah. See, that's an example of a secondary character telling a story that helps a primary character in a positive way.
Yeah.
An inspirational way, you know, as opposed to Maggie's. I'm sorry, I just cannot get over it. It was so upsetting to me when I was watching it. I was like, oh, God.
I mean, I was upset too.
Yeah.
But this is, again, like, how do you use a secondary character or, like, a straight male love interest successfully? You have that character that guide them towards a better understanding of themselves. But this is also because Gavin clearly knows Macy pretty well, and they've had time to sort of develop their dynamic. And Gavin is someone who Macy trusts for advice. Like, Macy goes to Gavin and says, hey, if you were to save one life for all of them, and Gavin sort of says right off the bat, if there's even a chance that we could save this one person, I would pursue it.
Yeah.
So she clearly trusts his opinion. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, this other kid, what does he do? Like, the white kid, he's, like, a tutor. He's low-key interested in another woman, even though he's dating the head of her sorority. Like,
yeah. I mean, if flirting is cheating, then he's a cheater already. You know, like, because that flirting was not low-key. He was, like, going in, like, he was single and she was single and he was trying to get with her.
I mean, the thing is, after that kiss, he still shows up the next day to tutor her. Mm-hmm. If he had some kind of moral center, he would have said something and said, like, hey, this isn't cool. I don't think it's a good idea for me to tutor you, or something like
that. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fact that he just acted like everything was cool when mm-hmm. when he was introduced at that party by the sorority sister, I was like, God, what a shithead. Like, he's just like, oh, hey, yeah, it's me, the guy who was flirting with you earlier. Like, you know, he's just been smiling through it this whole time. I'm like, can you at least have the, like, the graciousness to act embarrassed? Mm, you know, yes. like you've been
Where's
caught.
Where's your shame?
Yeah.
Where is your shame?
He has no shame. It's ridiculous. No. Sorry, go ahead.
Positive developments for Macy in this episode in that she comes to embrace her emotional side and she learns something about her mother that she didn't know before that helps her come to terms with the fact that she was abandoned by mm-hmm, her mother. Mm-hmm. But to know that her mother was in pain too must give her some kind of peace. And to know that also the mom knew that the three of them would one day be united on this issue. That was wonderful. Like having them all unite. I loved that the spell appeared once all three of them were unanimous in their decision to save Angela. And like hearing them shout it in Spanish, I definitely got chills while I was watching that scene. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, that was very powerful.
Because the spell that was in that book was unsanctioned by the elders. Mm. And I like that Harry, our white lighter, goes with it. He decides to defy the elders in supporting the girls, in exorcising the demon from Angela. It's also kind of symbolic too, because like what they're doing is not sanctioned by the elders, and neither is this spell. So it's sort of setting it up again for Mel and her sisters and her mother as a force that pushes back against the existing witch order. Mm-hmm. We do kind of need like a larger villain that's not just the Harbinger, like a villain that is part of the elders or that is part of the existing quote unquote witch establishment.
I think we're going to get a taste of that because remember the episode ended with another warlock or something put a spell on Charity, who's mm-hmm. supposed to be a powerful elder. Like, I mean, it was, I guess his power was like hypnosis or something it looked like.
Yeah.
To switch the paint can so that he took the one that had the Harbinger in it. And then she was just none the wiser. So maybe that's part of, you know, a small piece of a puzzle to like a bigger villain storyline. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hoping for at least.
Two things here that still made me suspicious. Mm-hmm. Why didn't Charity freak the fuck out when she saw a guy walk in with an identical paint can into the elevator? Like, I rewatched that scene.
Yeah.
He walks in, you don't see his hand, so it's you can't see from the camera angle that he's holding a paint can.
Yeah.
But I'm like, Charity, the elevator's pretty small. How could you not see this guy walk in with an identical looking paint can? So that's one. And then Natasha brought up a really great point. Why didn't they just kill the demon after they exorcised it? Why'd they have to keep it in a paint can?
Yeah, I was wondering what the long-term plan for that was, because I thought they were just going to kill it or, you know, whatever, dispel it, dispatch it back to hell, whatever they do with demons. And then when they captured it, I thought maybe it was too powerful to be killed and it just had to be contained. And so maybe she was just taking it somewhere safe for containment or taking it somewhere, you know, the process of destroying it also required it to mm-hmm. be transported. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
It's possible that it was a line that I missed, but...
Yeah, I'm guessing it takes a different spell to destroy it when it's not in a corporeal form.
Probably.
Yeah.
As for the paint can thing, I think because you're right, the camera angle made it so that we as the audience didn't see it. So I think it was meant to be implied that like Charity didn't notice or didn't really think anything of it. And then he kind of started the mind control thing right away. So by the end of whatever he did, for sure, she may have even forgotten that it happened at all, that another guy got in the elevator. So I think we'll find out more about that on the next episode. Hopefully she brings it up. Speaking of the next episode, did you see the preview?
Yes, I did.
It is
Melco
heavy. We're getting a lot.
Okay. So if you haven't watched the preview for episode 5, it is a doozy. It's like just a few seconds, but like basically Mel says that she needs to, she wants to find a way to, I don't know, alter reality as if she and Nico had never met. Mm-hmm. And it's to protect Nico.
Right.
I hate this shit.
Okay. It's highly reminiscent of Xena though. Remember when she tried to change her past and then, you know, found out that no one was better off for it. So,
Yeah, no. I mean, they're just trying to scare us, and it's working.
Oh yeah, I don't think it's. I don't think she's gonna go through with it. You know, this it's not gonna be a permanent thing. For yeah, sure.
But it definitely has my heart palp. Like I'm like my heart racing a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my god, what's gonna happen to our couple? And also, like, there's no way that Mel's gonna be able to keep a secret like how Trip actually died and how he's not actually the killer of those, like of those kids on Halloween. Mm-hmm. Mel's guilt is another aspect of this of her character.
Right.
She's coming to terms with her guilt about what happened to Angela, and now she feels guilty about Tripp's death, and now she's going to feel guilty about the secret that she's keeping from Nico about Tripp.
Yeah.
Among other things.
Yeah.
And so we've also learned that Mel is someone who's driven, like who's driven by her guilt. Like, yes, you should save Angela Wu. Like, period. But mm-hmm. that shouldn't have to depend on you feeling like you were the reason why she's in the, why Angela
right.
Got a demon in her, you know?
Yeah. Like, I think the Trip storyline is not quite over. I mean, obviously he's died, but, you know, in real life, there would be an investigation. It's not like, oh, looks like he killed those people. Like, they actually have to, like, find hard evidence to support that. Mm. So it's possible that Nico is going to be, like, kind of continuing to investigate either as part of an official police investigation or, you know, on her own because she's like, there's no way that he did it. I don't know if they're just going to let that go or not.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Huh. No.
But that would be an opportunity to see her kind of more independently from Mel and have her own storyline and sort True. Of finding out stuff because, you know, if she's investigating what happened that night, she's going to get closer to finding out the truth about Mel and her sisters. So yeah. I feel like that would be some good tension.
Mm-hmm. I know. Oh my God. Woo! Another strong episode minus all the Maggie bullshit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I want more flashback scenes with their mom. I would love to see yeah. more of that.
I would love that too. It's great, like, building on a character that is no longer in the show but is so important to the
oh, yeah.
primary characters.
And yeah. I like the idea of, like, watching the girls interact with their mother. I mean, we wouldn't get that with Macy in a flashback.
Right.
But maybe we could, like, maybe there's a scene that they could give us where we get some insight into how she arrived at this decision mm-hmm, to let go of Macy.
Yeah, or if we find out that, you know, she was checking on her without Macy knowing that she kind yeah. of, like, checked in on her to make sure she was okay,
God.
You know.
Yeah.
That'd be really cute.
That would be really, really cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would be all for that.
Mm-hmm.
We got to keep our fingers crossed for Melko in this next episode. I do like that they're definitely giving us Melko in pretty much every episode. They haven't gone a single episode
yeah.
without.
Yeah, so, and Nico you know, herself has been, it's not just like being mentioned. Like Nico has been in every single episode. We are truly so, blessed.
I feel really lucky. And I feel like I have to put this in contrast with some other shows. So I forgot to mention this earlier. Mm. Amir and I are both fans of The Good Place.
Yes.
And we're just waiting for Eleanor and Tahani to hook up already.
Yeah.
Like there's a fandom where like there's a lesbian fandom waiting to jump on board to this show.
What's the ship name again?
Telenor. Tahani and Eleanor. Okay.
Thank you.
They should Tahani and Eleanor should hook up at least a few times mm-hmm. on the show. Like just give us a simulation. Like whatever. I mean that's essentially what happens on The Good Place. So if you're not caught up on The Good Place, 2 weeks ago, we found out that Eleanor is canonically at least bi.
Yeah, she is. She is. I mean, the writers have confirmed she is bisexual.
She's like in some kind of like simulation and Chidi is trying to break up with his girlfriend. And Eleanor tries to get into that and starts talking to Chidi's girlfriend. But then it kind of turns into flirting. And then
she's like, oh, my God, what's happening?
What's happening?
It was
and then
so
like
great.
You see her like put her hand on the girlfriend's hand and then she reaches like and she like both of them have their mouths open and they're like reaching across the table, their mouth reaching across the table and about to kiss before they get knocked out of the simulation. And then Eleanor is like, hey, I was just getting to the good part.
Yeah. And then later she tells Chidi, like, you're not bisexual, it's 2018. Like
yeah, I love that line.
I know.
It just sort of very casually let us know that Eleanor has been bi this whole time.
Yeah.
And hasn't been trying to hide anything. I still would like her and Tahani to hook up, but like I would have been fine with her and Chidi's girlfriend
yeah.
hooking up too. Like
Eleanor with I'll ship her with any woman really on the show.
Yeah. I'm like thinking about a show like Charmed, and I'm thinking about other shows like The Good Place and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, where there are queer characters, but we get not a whole lot of queerness. Mm-hmm. They're just sort of there. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're a queer character, and you're there in the scene.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily about, you know,
their queerness.
You dating. It's not about your queerness. You're just there in the scene. And I think we should have both. We should have scenes of queer people just being there, and we should have storylines of queer people being queer. And like showing that queerness on screen,
exactly.
And not like it's something you have to hide. But, you know, when we get every single episode, Melko like has some kind of relevant storyline, mm-hmm. versus the other shows that we watch, cough, cough, Black Lightning.
Yeah.
Where, you know,
yeah.
Where, you know, I mean, this week they didn't air an episode of Black Lightning because of the election night, which is fair. But I'm not sure that we get to see Grace Troy in the next one either.
Yeah.
So she's not listed until I think episode 7 on IMDb. Chantal Toy. I think mm-hmm. she's listed for episode 7 of season 2 and episode 11. I'm going to keep tuning in just in case, like, there's any sort of reference to that storyline or, you know, other things move
forward. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm interested in the main storyline anyway, so I'm gonna continue to watch the show. I mean, like we've said before, it's supposed to be canon that they get together, so I feel like I'm watching just for that inevitability. But at the same time, I'm watching because, like, you know, I'm loving, first of all, that there's, like, a black superhero on our screens.
And they're bulletproof, but, like...
Yeah, I mean, showing the whole black family in a black community facing black mm-hmm. issues. I mean, this is stuff that we've been wanting to see for a long time. So, of course, I'm going to support it now that it's actually here. Mm-hmm. I do, of course, wish that they spent more time on the queer storyline, but by no means will I stop watching the show if it's not, you know, explicitly featured in every single episode. I'll just be disappointed and I'll complain about it every week on this podcast.
Yes, which is, you know, that's what we're here for.
Exactly.
We're here to complain and to be excited. We can do both. We can do both.
Yeah. This was a fun episode of Charm to talk about. We both endorse The Good Place. Aphrodite, I believe you would say that
I
you endorse
Crazy
Ex-Girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah. Valencia has a girlfriend on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, but we have not seen her yet this season, and I'm kind of upset about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I feel like we're getting a lot with Melko, but I also don't want Melko to be the only queer women of color representation that we're getting on a weekly basis.
Yeah. I mean, think about Mel's character. She should have like a whole group of queer people or even specifically women of color that she hangs out with on a regular basis, especially given that she is a queer woman of color, dating a queer woman of color. I mean, she's like an activist. She's like, she should be right in the heart of that community.
Oh my gosh. You know what we should get? Webisodes. We should get webisodes of Nico, you know, little like snippets.
Yeah, I would love little snippets of like their day-to-day life in webisodes. I'm always a big fan of webisodes, and I know it's a lot of extra work for the cast and crew of the show.
I know.
But...
Oh my gosh. You know what I would like? I would like flashbacks of Mel and Nico when they first met.
Yes, yes. I would love that too. I would
give us that, like, were they gaybies when they met? Like, how long have they been dating? You know, like, who was the awkward one? Who made the first move? I want all those details. Because, like, obviously we know that Nico was engaged when they first met. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot of juicy dyke drama that's
right,
just not
right.
being explored.
And I want to know, you know, because we've been wondering, like, when did Nico being a cop get addressed? So it's like, did they meet like on the queer scene and then Mel found out later that she was a cop? Or was it like Mel was at Pride and Nico was just like a beat cop at the time working, working during Pride, and you know, their first interaction was like clashing.
Oh my God. Maybe they like hooked up and then the next morning
Mel
out.
Found her badge or something, you know, like while she was like leaving and was like, fuck,
I slept with a cop.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Either way, any way that they could have possibly met is a story that I want to hear. So
just lots of like untapped dyke drama, and we're hoping that the writers are willing to just give us a little bit more.
Yeah, like, and I want to make it clear, we're not unhappy. I mean, for God's sake, it's the fourth episode. Like,
I know.
We needed the plot exposition and character development that we've gotten so far on like the main people, and I am so happy about what we've gotten so far. I'm just like really hopeful that we're gonna get, you know, the stuff that we've been discussing mm-hmm. in the future, and hopefully the near future.
We're not trying to be ungrateful.
Yeah, writers. No, definitely not.
Keep doing what you're doing, except for the BS with the white guy.
Yeah. Scrap Maggie stuff. We don't like that.
Yeah. And on that note, thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us again next time, and that next time we'll have more Queer Women of Color ships to talk about.
See you guys next week.
Bye.